now from a nondescript server room in a top secret location in Southern California, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We have a ton in store for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. You probably are living in a cave if you didn't realize that CES was this past week. CES 2026 is the big, huge consumer electronics show. That's what it used to be called. And so we're going to be covering that on the news here in just a moment. I will note that Dr. Doreen Galley was live on scene. She did a lot of different things, checking out a lot of tech. We've got two segments of her doing this, one in this hour, one in the second hour. So if you miss the second hour in your neck of the woods, or you want to get back to it, the podcast is a place to go. I'll tell you about the podcast here in a moment, how to find that. Keith McIndoe is going to be giving us different options for storage of data. Mark, he's going to review three sets of earbuds, one from Technic, one from Shox, and one from Status Pro. Steve Keske, how is modern technology reshaping the lives of senior citizens? We've got a couple of listener questions. Eve, her son's video game needed updates while it was still new, just coming out of the box, brand new game and all of that. Lionel, does using ad blockers really hurt people's businesses? On the IT Pro series, IT pros aren't blaming you, they're working as detectives. And then on the scam series, the fake job funnel, when the interview is the scam. All of that on this week's Computer Talk Radio. I did mention I was going to tell you how to catch out the podcast. That is, of course, there. Look for podcast or listen here. You can also reach out to us with your computer questions, your technology concerns. Again, at computertalkradio.com. Let's dive into CES and give you some of the highlights, some of the big items. And CES always feels like a peek through the keyhole into the future. Not just because of flashy screens or robots doing backflips, which are things that happened, but many of the different ideas on display that feel like they're finally catching up to some of the dreams we've been promised for years. There were a number of different moments, apparently. I've been tracking this the entire week, and I was really amazed by a number of different things. One of the biggest things is from a company you don't think of as being a technology company, Lego. Lego? Yes, Lego. And yes, there have been some technology items in the past from them, but this is moving it to a new level. These aren't just colorful plastic bricks anymore. They've been upgraded with some sensors, some lights, and little tiny speakers. And if you stack them in certain ways, they'll light up, they'll make sounds, or they'll trigger animations in a connected app. But the real thing, they can detect each other. One of the things, I saw a video on this, and they had built a Lego spaceship from a big movie that was done in 76. You might know which one I'm talking about. And it will make all kinds of different engine noises when you tilt it up. And you flip a minifig that's little characters upside down, and they'll snore. And this is really cool for kids because it's screen free. And because of that, it feels quite magical. And this is a brand new system that Lego is calling BrickNet. I love that name. So yes, in case you didn't know which spaceship it was, yes, it was Star Wars. I couldn't resist holding out on that one. Now, from childhood dreams to grown-up productivity, Lenovo did a lot of really big, huge rollouts. Amongst the top of this, rollable laptop screens. The ThinkPad Rollable XD. It starts off as a 13-inch screen. Think your standard small form factor laptop. But with a press of a button, the screen will scroll upwards like a Windows shade to reveal the full 16-inch display. It's vertical. It's going up. But that's okay for people who are living in spreadsheets or they're writers or they're coders. At the same time, they also did one for those who are gamers and creatives instead going sideways. So it moves into a cinematic 24:9 aspect ratio. To give you an idea, the standard true widescreen that we refer to, your television is probably 16:9. So 24:9, that's really wide. Both models, they have admitted they're still in the concept phase, but a lot of people are saying that they're polished and these things are probably going to be a lot closer to the future than we were expecting. And along the lines of screens, there's a new thing. You've been familiar with LCD and OLED and all a quantum LED, QLED, and stuff like that. Micro RGB displays were a big, huge thing. And this is an evolution of micro LEDs, and they are dense. They are vibrant. And while I wasn't able to make it to CES, so I didn't see them in person, but everybody said that these are outshining the 4K OLED screens. These are really just amazing stuff. So Samsung, TCL, and a number of others were showing off prototypes, including AR glasses, smartwatches, and foldables with these really crisp screens. The big thing, they're brighter, and they use less power, which means longer battery life, thinner devices, and that is exciting. It is also a glimpse at the future. It's not at mass production yet, but they're getting close to that. Now, pivoting, I did mention Samsung for that, but we'll pivot into the fact that they've got a new tri-fold phone, which is, you picture a phone, a regular smartphone that opens once to become a tablet, and then again flipping open the other side to become something approaching a laptop screen. They're calling this the Flex S, and it folds into an S shape, hence the name. The hinges are tight, and the screen is reportedly crease-free, so it folds down into something that'll fit in your pocket. They do say it's not a gimmick, and multitasking across the three panels will feel natural. You'll be able to have a video call and a document and a browser open all at once just on different sections of the screen. So that could be kind of cool. Motorola is back, and they have a new flagship phone, which is less about hardware tricks and more about AI. Yeah, okay. It is powered by something they're calling Qira, Q-I-R-A, which is a personal AI that lives across your devices. So you can start writing an email over on your phone. You can then be suggested to finish it on your laptop. You ask for a photo from last summer, it'll bring it up right away without any cloud sync or any of that. And all of this processing is done locally, which is an exciting thing. I like the idea of AI being local. It's going to be interesting to see how accurate it is, how deep and involved, and how intelligent they can get to this. But this could be really good. This could be a comeback time for Motorola. We'll see how that all rolls out. And I did mention the idea of Lenovo. But Dell is also there. They have come up with, and this is an amazing one, they brought back the XPS laptops. I'm excited about this. And along the way, okay, and this is coming from me. I've got an Alienware, which is also under Dell, but the XPS series has always held a really nice place in my heart. They've really brought it on down. They've got a haptic touchpad, edge-to-edge OLED screens. The bezels are really small. And all of this, they're running the latest Intel processors, AI accelerated, which of course is par for the course. They also have something called Concept Luna. And what's that? It's a modular laptop project. And this prototype can be disassembled in minutes with no screws, and fully recyclable parts. Now, that's not ready for shelves yet, but it tells me, tells all of us, that Framework, the Framework laptop, is in the right direction. It's where a lot of people are interested in going. And Dell, apparently, feels threatened by that. And I like that. That gives us a glimpse of where we're going. And yes, there were other oddball things out there, robotic pets and AI-powered toothbrushes and a stair-climbing vacuum cleaner to replace your Roomba. Look, CES is full of all kinds of stuff. And coming up next, Dr. Jereen Galley is going to give us her impressions of the first day of CES. That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
Let's dive right in to CES 2026. Dr. Jereen Galley's with me. And actually, before we even go any further, let's talk about what CES is. It is an absolutely amazing trade show regarding consumer electronics and a bunch of other stuff. And it's been going in Vegas for... oh, however long it is, 40, 50 years at least.
I think I have in my conference whispers the history of when the first was. I think it was in New York or something like that, but I don't remember off the top of my head. But it used to technically stand for the Consumer Electronics Show, but it does not. But it's always represented not just the best in tech that you and I use in our everyday life, but what it takes to make that. And all the parts and components
and
sessions on how to create it, which is enterprise tech.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which I kind of laugh. I still remember when we spoke after MWC and you asked on consumer tech. And I said no, even though 65% was. Because I was thinking, as a consumer, can I go in and buy it? And a lot of times it's not necessarily the stuff you just buy as a consumer off the street. But that's what it's used to create.
Yes.
And then we do at MWC, and it's, I mean, there's everything here is the biggest show in so many different categories.
Oh, yeah. So CES takes over Las Vegas, and CES, as I've stated before, outshines the Las Vegas Strip. What? Yes. You have to kind of go there to really appreciate it. And I'll tell you, okay, before I dive in, my son, I took him there for the first time. Oh, this is like 15 years ago. And he had been to Vegas before. And he is wandering through. We had a chance. We had to record at the back of Central Hall before it actually even opened. We had a meeting with whoever it was back there. I think it was Sony or whatever. So we got to go running through this whole area as everybody's setting up. And my son is looking as we're passing by these big, huge walls of televisions.
Rubbernecking everywhere.
For LG and whatnot. And he's just like, what's going on? So let's start off. Day one. You show up and you went to, was there anything before CES unveiled?
So yes, day one for press starts early. We it's on Sunday at Mandalay Bay, and you have a couple things. You have JETRO, which is the Japanese trade organization, does a skit where every company has like 4 or 5 minutes to talk about their company. It's an investors and meet the media, meet investors.
Okay.
And they talk about who they are and what they do and great technology there. And they have the CTA Tech Trends. The CTA Tech Trends, CTA produces CES, and their analysts do analytics over the economics of technology. And their big report, I have 100% on tape. Yeah. Channel,
yeah.
TBW Advisors on YouTube. That's T for Technical, B for Business, and W for Whispers. You can catch the entire session where they went over what to look and what to hope.
Very cool. Now, does CTA still stand for the Consumer Technology Association, or has that also been renamed?
That's a great question.
It's just poking fun at the CES. It's not the Consumer Electronics Show. Anyways, let's go on. Yeah. I couldn't resist.
It was great. I mean, it was at Mandalay Bay on Sunday, and there is so much media there. It's not even funny. And so you first have the Jetro, which I like to go to, and every 4 minutes there's a new one. There's a couple interesting ones. Sometimes get that one confused with the one on Monday. Monday has the power sessions, which is also, they're all put on by Showstoppers. That one is Showstoppers event itself, right? And so Jetro had Swipe Video, which is, you know how you have embedded video and applications and you can change your angles?
Yeah.
The difference with this tech, it doesn't just give you 6 angles. It gives you 365 degrees of selection.
Okay.
Any angle.
Nice,
whatsoever.
Nice.
Yeah. Really easy to snap in. So anyone who's wanting to do for sports broadcasting or anything else and you want to show 360 view, Swipe Video is there. Very interesting.
All right.
Very interesting. AI Proctor was there, which everyone gave a very gasping sound because they help detect when you cheat on tests or interviews. And everyone's like, no one in the room like that.
Everybody's busted.
And they pay attention to your gaze and stuff like that. And admittedly, the whole time they were speaking, I was thinking, what if someone's autistic? Because autistic people or any neurodivergent people always – their look and gaze pattern is different than non-neurodivergent.
Yes, distinctly. They have a hard time with engaging, especially, for like myself, I don't engage visually when I'm talking to someone. When I'm listening to them, I can focus in, and it's very difficult for me to do that.
And I would think they would think that's cheating because you glanced away from the computer screen or something.
Sure,
I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to see how they fine tuned it. But you know, it's interesting. The main thing is they have a second camera, and so they can watch from an angle and the angle here, the two angles. Mm-hmm. They can see if you're looking at a second device. I'm not sure if people would want to go to an interview and have two cameras live. You know, from a privacy perspective. There was another because I know you like, so I tried to pay attention to the technologies that were kind of like not so sure. There's another one where it gives you auditory privacy. And
okay.
So it's this like mask that goes over your mouth, but it's for auditory privacy. And they change out this plastic thing between users. I'm thinking, well, you're breathing in it. I think you need a little bit more than that.
I'm envisioning like the device that what was his Bane
the air.
A Bane from Batman?
COVID. Yeah,
okay.
Just like that.
Okay.
But it's for auditory privacy, but it doesn't have any of the filtering technology. And so I'm not sure, and they think you can use it between different people. I think they're going to have – I didn't quite get it.
Okay.
Either, but they're saying this is easier and cheaper than a big soundproof room for meetings, which I get it, but who really wants to put a muzzle over your mouth so people don't hear you speaking?
Sure, yeah. So was AI big?
Yes. But the marketing term.
Yes.
And I'm going to say marketing term because, for example, AI is technically applied math of basic multivariate algebra.
Yeah.
There's, of course, generative as well and agentic, which is modern. But AI, when you say artificial intelligence, it includes applied math. That has been used for decades and decades and decades.
Sure.
And so when they say physical AI, because the AI and the robots, I'm thinking, have you ever met a robot without AI?
Wait. Physical AI. That's the term they're changing.
That's
robots.
Marketing term everywhere. Physical AI. Physical AI. Yep.
Data is no longer an android. He's physical AI. Great. So much for the positronic brain. All right, go on.
The agentic AI, the agent is now a physical agent, right?
Okay.
So, yeah. Okay, so that was kind of interesting. But they definitely had this physical AI. So many robots and extended reality, whether it's virtual reality, simulation, you know, complete virtual reality, extended reality, mixed reality, any and all of those realities. Absolutely. Yeah, we got so much to talk about. It's not even funny. We're going to be here for a while. You got more time, though, right? One of my favorites, too, was they got up on stage. It was another one of those where you got the audience reaction.
Yes.
Like they did when they said, we're going to proctor you during your interviews. These AGI got up on stage and they're like, imagine if Siri actually worked and the entire audience kind of had one of those, I'm trying to hold it in, I can't hold it in anymore, burst laugh. <We're> like,
you know, they
Apple,
keep promising.
I hope you're listening.
They
if
keep
a room full of engineers bust out laughing at your technology, I want to pay attention.
Yeah. So they keep promising, and the rumors are just a few more months. Just a few more. Just hang on. Just wait. Anyways, later on in the show, we're going to come back to Dr. Doreen Galley. She's going to cover more from CES 2026. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And Dr. Doreen Galley.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. Microcenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, Microcenter is your resource. Check out Microcenter.com today. Microcenter.com.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to me. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will reach out to you and answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Keith Emcedor joins me now, and Keith, what do you have for us this week?
Well, Benjamin, there are a lot of different places that a Mac user can store their data.
Okay.
You can store it in a tree. You can put it in a refrigerator. You can put it in your back pocket. Of course, I'm kidding. Well, actually, not so much.
I was wondering where you were going with that. That just threw
that
me for a loop.
That is actually kind of true, though.
Speechless again.
So let's talk about some of the fundamental places that a user can store their data.
Okay.
First and foremost is on the Mac itself. You know, we call that local storage because it's physically on the machine. And that does not include any external hard drives or USB flash drives that you'd plug into an external port like a USB or USB-C port.
Okay.
Because that would actually slow it down. Because when you go through USB, it's referred to as a system bus. And basically the same way you'd go through a toll plaza, you know, you would be slowed down as you transition through that toll plaza.
Well, isn't it going to depend on, like, if you're using Thunderbolt or USB-C, and also whether you've got system on chip or maybe one of the older Intel Macs?
Yes, and that is very true. Another thing that is important to be aware of is that there's also cloud storage. Now, I was just speaking with a client recently, and we were talking about how the term cloud storage, whether it's iCloud or Microsoft's OneDrive or, you know, Google Drive,
it Dropbox.
Conjures Dropbox, sure. They conjure up images of the data is just flying around all up in the air around your head, and you kind of reach out wirelessly and grab it, which is a bunch of nonsense. I mean, we might connect to the internet wirelessly, but it's not just flying around our heads there. You know, cloud storage literally means someone else's computer. So when you're dealing with someone else's computer, you are subject to the rigors and the challenges that one might face should they have any downtime, either for something as basic as daily maintenance, if you're an overnight type of worker, and their servers go down for maintenance from 2 to 5 a.m., you might have a lot of problems.
Well, and it's going to depend on which cloud storage solution you're talking about. For instance, okay, so Dropbox does keep all of the files locally, and when it connects up to the internet and their system updates are done, it will then sync up, which is nice. And each of the different platforms operates differently. I just know Dropbox very well because that's my primary go-to.
And you and I have used Dropbox. There have been times when we've recorded a segment for Computer Talk Radio, and I'm going to edit it, and you'll drop the file in Dropbox. I'll go in there and grab it, make my edits, and then drop it back in so you could take it and, you know, assemble the show. And it can be a very valuable tool when you are sharing data with other people, especially people who work remotely from you. But in my professional opinion, as an Apple certified consultant, it should not be your primary mode of storage, because the reality of if you know that you have a lot of data to store, number one, yes, I believe in backups. Number two, I do believe in having redundant backups.
Yeah.
But you want to make sure that the internal storage of your computer, not something you plug in externally, but the internal storage of your computer is up to the task of storing all of the data you currently own, as well as adding to and leaving space for future expansion and future growth of whatever data you store, whether it's your photos, your music, your movies, what have you. And if you don't, then you run the risk of getting a situation where the system severely slows down because it is full and you can't get through it to manage what's on the system
Yeah, and it's the same thing over in Windows. I mean, with any drive, you've got to leave a good amount of space left over for it to work with. So with my situation for storage, I use, of course, local is primary. My secondary mass storage is a NAS from Synology. Love that.
Is it really?
Yeah. Okay. And then I use Dropbox primarily. I've got OneDrive, which I use. I mean, we're talking, this is third place, fourth place, really, of some files that I want additional redundancy, and Google Drive, because I've got a couple of folks that I deal with that use Google Drive. So I'm in a number of these different spaces all the time. It's pretty wild, actually.
It is pretty wild. I basically advocate doing a lot of planning when purchasing your next computer. And I tell my clients, look at what your data needs are now Like, how full is your current hard drive? Let's say you've got a 1 terabyte hard drive and you've got 700-800 gigabytes on there already. I'll make the suggestion, well, not only do we need enough space to move all of the data you currently have, which would be 700-800 gigabytes, which means that your 1 terabyte is going to be close to full, but you want to consider future growth for this next machine you're going to have for half a decade. You might want to consider 2 terabytes.
Yeah, which is a very good rule of thumb. This is something that I have suggested to people for a long time. A matter of, you've got to account for additional information you're going to be doing, but also a matter of subsequent versions of the operating systems.
In
all areas are going to be larger than they have been in previous iterations.
Absolutely.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Cedor.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. If I don't answer, leave a message. I will get back with you. Mark Brownstein joins me now. And Mark, I understand you've been working with some earbuds. You've been trying out some new ones.
I sure have. And I'll go from the one that you'll probably recognize the name of first and kind of a gunshot review of each one. The first one is a Technics EAH-AZ100. Great name for a headset. Sounds great. Sounds really good.
Yeah.
And it's the garbage in, garbage out problem. A lot of times the stuff that you're thinking you're going to listen to is not very good. So it's the headsets, all of these that I'm looking at aren't going to be any better than the sound source.
Okay.
But this one has Dolby, and it's good. You could make out individual instruments, individual singers. The separation is good. Mm-hmm. For video, though, the sound is delayed. The mouth moves before the sound comes up. And this disconcerting to me. I dropped them once. They flew apart, but there's an alarm system built into the application. Let me find the thing beeping at me.
Okay.
So that's kind of nice. Yeah. Overall, it's pretty good. And it's on sale at Amazon somewhat.
Okay.
It's right now it's $247.99. This price is $299.99. I don't know if it's ever sold for full retail or not, but they're not bad. But
okay.
It's still $250.
Yeah.
So the next one is the Shox OpenFit 2, and this is by far my favorite.
Okay.
Sounds good. The sound is really good. They fit around the ear instead of going into the ear, which is nice, but it's not nice because you can hear all the sounds around you.
Okay.
You're in a quiet office, it's good. I had a problem with it during Christmas season because I was listening to my stuff and a Christmas carol's going in the background. I really didn't like that.
So I do like the Shox system for that open ear, full open ear sound. In certain situations, I like to hear at times everything that's going on around me. But you're right. At other times, we do want that feeling of this is what I'm focused on. This is this is all I want to hear. So, yeah, it definitely does serve a purpose.
Now, one thing about these are not like the shocks you're probably used to that go around the back of the neck and kind of hook on. These are not bone conduction. These are not.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They put a low amount of sound through the speaker part that hooks next to your ear. And really good. They've got Dolby in them. You can do Qi charging. And they're great for phone calls.
Nice.
I've gone through Trader Joe's and lots of people making sounds with their carts and talking and all that stuff. And the people at the other end of the line could not hear it.
Okay.
Which is a great
Very
thing.
Very nice. Yes.
Yeah. So these I like, and they're selling for $189.95 on Amazon.
Okay.
And the last one I'm going to talk about is one you probably have never heard of, Status Pro X.
Okay. I recall seeing that name somewhere, though. I'm heavily into audio, so I track a lot of these. What did you think of those?
I liked them. They sounded really good. They didn't say anything about Dolby, but they've got drivers that are interesting because they're not in the Technics or in the shocks. They sound good. They fit well in the ears. They only work with the headphones in both ears. The shocks require one ear or the other. They don't have to be in both ears. But I had a problem with them. Problem is they've got a rectangular part that fits on the ear and fits in the case. And it's awfully hard to put those things into a case. It's a lot easier with a circular piece or no piece at all to fit into the case. So sure. I had problems with that. The other thing that was a little bit odd was that the name Shox was nowhere near the case. It wasn't on the case. It wasn't on the earbuds. If you didn't know it was Shox, you wouldn't know who made it.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
These days, you know, in these days, everybody wants to put their name everywhere, emblazoned in big, huge letters. You can see this from the moon.
Absolutely.
And, I will say there is something to be said for understated and stuff like that. I've got a set of Jabra ear sets myself, which I've had for a long time, considering Jabra no longer makes these earbuds, they've exited out of the market. It is very interesting to see how little they were low key. I mean, I could see it on there if you held it. It was there was an impression on it, and then on the earbuds themselves, it said Jabra, but it was very light, very very interesting.
Yeah, I've had Jabras, and it was a little bit difficult to figure out which you were listening to.
Yeah. You know, across all of these lines, it's a matter of these lines will all have, these manufacturers will have a number of different things, and some of them are low-end. They're a little bit less expensive. Some of them are going to be a lot more expensive, and the quality is going to differ between those.
Oh, yeah. That's the whole idea.
Yes.
You don't want to have the same thing, but same name with two products and two different price points. You have to have.
Yeah. Some difference. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Mark Brownstein. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do.
These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And scammers know that we are all anxious about job security. We're all looking to find a new job, or, well, not all of us, but many of us are trying to get a new job. Maybe we're desperate and so forth. So what do they do? What do the bad guys do? They create fake job listings that look polished, legitimate, and urgent. And I've talked about this before. But these listings often appear on real job boards. They use stolen company names, cloned logos, and AI-written descriptions. Amongst all of this, the interview, and I use that in air quotes, is usually some kind of a chat-based conversation. It's designed to feel efficient, modern, and they're seeking to lower your suspicion. But instead of evaluating your skills, digging deeper into who you are and what makes for you being a good worker versus a bad one, they start focusing in on gathering your personal data. We're talking about your address, your birth date, your social security, your banking info for direct deposit. And some of these different versions of these fake job funnels is to ask you to purchase equipment up front and promising a reimbursement that never comes. They'll send a fake check for equipment and then they'll push you right away to move forward those funds over to a vendor, and they trigger off what is the classic check fraud trap. And the scam works because much of this process mimics real remote work hiring trends. And it somehow feels right. It somehow feels normal, but it's not. You should never handle anything in regards to the purchasing of equipment. You should never give over any of your information until you're already hired. And many times, victims will say that the red flags were subtle. There were things like rushed onboarding, vague job duties, or overly enthusiastic acceptance of them as an employee. The best defense here is for you to make sure that you're not being hired at the drop of a hat. We're so desperate, we're going to handle anybody. As long as you've got a pulse, you're going to get the job. You need to go through, you need to verify job postings directly on the company's official website before engaging. You need to make sure that a formal offer letter and onboarding paperwork arrive. The typical time to onboard an employee isn't a matter of a day or two. It usually takes a few weeks. Look, if the interview sounds like a formality rather than an evaluation, you need to pump the brakes. You need to step back and check whether this job exists at all. Don't get me wrong. Occasionally, if you know half of the people in the company, you've already got a foot in the door. Yeah, it's going to be a formality situation. I'm talking about strangers that have no clue who you are. And, oh yeah, they're checking a box to pretend like you've been interviewed. That's your red flag right there. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
He makes computers seem easy, but that pocket protector says otherwise. Translating technobabble to English, your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. Of course, the website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's how you can find the podcast, the news articles, and also reach out to us. We're interested in your computer questions and your technology concerns. So if you want to reach out to us, scroll down to where it says contact us today. Again, computertalkradio.com. You also can reach out to me. Phone me at 888-NERD, 888. That's 888-6373-888. I am, of course, not always able to answer your phone call, but that number works all the time. If I don't answer, leave a message and I will get back with you. Steve Keske joins me now, and Steve, I want to ask you, and this is kind of a broader topic, I want to ask you how you feel technology, especially modern technology, is shaping or reshaping the lives of seniors.
Ooh.
Yes.
There's a number of things. One, in medicine, a lot of things like dementia and Alzheimer's, they're being able to use technologies like MRIs to start looking at the actual makeup of the brain.
Yes.
And determine if a person has dementia. See, right now, the only way to tell is after the person dies.
Yeah.
With an autopsy. So that technology going in that direction is pretty eye-opening for a senior.
Yeah.
Then you've got things like having your network set up so that it turns on lights for people that have limited eyesight and things on this order.
So like in smart homes.
Yeah, like in smart homes.
So as you're wandering through a smart home, in some smart homes they do have like motion sensors.
Yeah.
And being able to walk into the room and it coming on. Or I know in your case, you have some lights set up so when you walk into a room, you can say, hey, turn on the lights.
Yeah.
And boom, the lights come on. Yeah, okay.
When
all
they're
right.
working.
Okay. Well, it's like technology sometimes.
You know.
Yeah.
It has to, it's not foolproof. And that's, that and the technology when it comes to aiding people getting around.
Sure.
Technology we're on the cusp of air taxis, autonomous.
I don't know that we're really on the.
I would say we're on the cusp of the possibility of having one because right now they are working with ones with pilots, and the only problem right now with those is getting the okay from the FAA and also from the local people that say, "Can we put a heliport in your neighborhood?"
I think we're a ways away from that, just because the FAA has been so monolithic in regards to allowing new air travel. Now, I will take it in a different direction. I think things like Waymo and some of these other services as they are expanding and coming into new areas.
Yeah.
That is exciting to me. The idea that an elderly person would be able to get onto their smartphone, which is most elderly people now these days are getting smartphones. Yes, there are some that are still stuck with the flip phones. They want to stay with the old technology. But those that have smartphones can be able to call up these days. Everybody is able to call up Uber or Lyft.
Yeah.
But then we move to that next level of the self-driving, which can be quite a benefit for seniors who want a little bit more security and also a little bit more freedom and flexibility to move about the land.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's only, you know, one step higher than that is going actually flying from place to place.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can understand where there are places right now that, well, okay, take Amazon and flying in your package.
Yes.
I mean, and other deals like that. It's not everywhere, but where it is, they say it works.
Yeah.
You know, having, to me, an autonomous vehicle or even a piloted vehicle like a VTOL, to me, it sounds great because of, hey, I have an emergency,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And if you have an emergency, that kind of aircraft can work better than an ambulance on the ground.
That could be in a number of areas, especially as we move further away from the hospitals and out into rural areas. Yeah, I can see where that would definitely be a boon. Yeah,
I mean, in a built up area, I can understand an ambulance would be okay if people got out of the way. Yeah. But I know that doesn't necessarily happen either.
So let me go into kind of a different tack on this topic, too.
Okay.
And that is, how has technology shaped the overall topic? How has technology shaped the lives of seniors? That's for the listeners. But one of the areas that I have seen an uptick, actually, it's not so much an uptick. We know that the scammers are targeting seniors, and they're using technology in a lot of different ways to target them. How bad do you feel it is?
How bad?
Yeah. I mean, every single one is bad, but
true. I mean, true. I haven't had a scammer hit me yet.
Okay. Well,
so
that's
good. I can understand that and my age, but I have watched videos, I have watched news reports on people who have gotten scammers and things on this order. And yes, it can be very devastating.
Yeah.
To me, the biggest problem is big business not protecting the data of the individuals.
That is very true. And
if the scammer does not have the information, you're pretty much pretty safe.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is something that is a problem across the board.
Yeah.
I think that is a distinct thing, issue that we are all at a disadvantage for.
Yep.
So any other areas where you think technology has gone too far for seniors?
Well, I was just watching a segment on the Social Security Administration.
Yeah.
And the fact that the Social Security information is only as good as the technology of the people entering the data.
Yeah.
And if they don't enter the data correct, you could be alive, but according to Social Security, you're dead.
Ew. Yeah, I would not want that one.
That's, you know, that technology that's gone really. You know, and the people say that because Social Security sells those lists of people that have died to private companies.
Yeah.
The punk company says, well, Social Security says you're dead. You must be dead. And if you go to use your bank account, you're out of luck because, according to them, you're dead.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of technology has got to be really, really more intensely scrutinized.
I think all the way along, we keep leveraging technology. We say it's so cool. All of this technology that we can use to get more data, more data, more data from here, there, everywhere. Unfortunately, we don't look ahead at some of the ramifications. We don't think ahead too often about, hey, this could be bad. We gather information, but we don't think about the information that's coming in and if we're validating it in quite the proper way. There are so many different things we could talk about. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. That is the voice of Steve Keske. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo. 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at ComputerTalkRadio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. Dr. Doreen Galley rejoins us now here in the second hour of Computer Talk Radio. And the whole idea of CES taking over Las Vegas is something most people can't comprehend. But it does so much coverage of everything that you can imagine in regards to tech news that it takes over the news completely for the week. It's a wild ride. Now, last we were talking, you were in the middle of it wasn't even press day. Press day is usually the second day.
Well, Sunday and Monday.
Sunday so it's now 2 days of press day. Okay.
Yeah.
Go on. Continue. Take over.
It doesn't officially open until Tuesday. So, So we get two extra days. So it's fun. But on the sessions, they had the Jetro and then the Power Ups, which were run by Showstopper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the other interesting ones, there's a couple. One was a microgravity lab. So
okay.
If you want to test things in microgravity, because space travel is coming, there might be different benefits in science. You either have to reserve time on the International Space Station.
Mm-hmm.
Very limited, very expensive.
Yeah.
Or you only get 45 seconds of microgravity in the airplane that this little, right?
The vomit comet, yes.
The vomit comet, exactly. And so these microgravity labs, they were created, and they actually made them very cost-effective, but it was for commercial research.
Okay.
And it was interesting, although it might not be necessarily be the most environmental, but they create this capsule. It's 100% automated testing.
Mm-hmm.
And they send it up for 6 months, and it does all its testing, and they get all of the data, but they don't retrieve it. It just goes.
Okay. Just drop it back into the atmosphere? Or?
And by creating something that they didn't have to retrieve, they were able to get the cost very economical.
Okay.
So you can do microgravity testing, and it's fully automated. I mean, they're up to 6 months up there. And so
Nice. Literally
you can test a 6 month long experiment on microgravity as opposed to 45 seconds or waiting 6 years for the International Space Station.
That's exciting. Yeah. Well, 6 years out, I guess the International Space Station is planned to shut down by then. So, yeah.
Well, it's hard to imagine where the governments will be cooperating and not cooperating 6 years from now.
Yeah.
Truth be told, I don't know if I can project that, even as a futurist.
Yeah, exactly.
Another fun one, which I know a lot of techies and geeks are into anime. I don't know. Are you into anime?
A few of them, not a whole lot. And I mean, we're talking stuff from my childhood. We're talking Space Battleship Yamato, which was Star Blazers, and Battle of the Planets. Those are kind of where I started off. But
so have you ever wanted to meet any of them in life? We could just go up and give them a hug. But not because it's a person, because it's a hologram.
Sure. Yeah. Okay.
But yeah. The tech exists, and they're bringing it to amusement parks and such. So,
okay,
yeah. A virtual of your animes. It's called Kukeki, and anime comes to life with it. So, very interesting. There was someone else that created a custom co-pilot for counselors at schools, okay. K-12, and teachers.
Okay, all right.
Highly specialized. One of the presentations we saw, I'm going to get more details from them tomorrow because I'm still right in the middle of CES, full disclosure.
Sure.
Tomorrow. So in India, there is this company that's very large. I mean, everyone knows there's a few big ones, but I think it's called, what is it? SRK? It's a huge diamond company in India.
Okay.
Those are the initials, right? Anyway, one of the relatives of the family was into electronics, and they said, you know what? We have the same skill set as electronics manufacturing, which they do. If you do pattern matching, what to do and what they're doing with virtual and augmented reality to fine-tune, it's the same thing you do in electronics manufacturing.
Sure, yeah.
And so they branched out and suddenly have another multi-billion-dollar business.
Okay. Yeah.
Approached it from a completely different way than how everyone else was doing it because they came from the diamond business.
Sure. That makes total sense. I mean, they're raking in the money. They've got to diversify, and tech is definitely a world to diversify into.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There was an energy company called Stryten Energy, and they not only create batteries for storage of power and such, but they use vanadium for storage of power, which is not as common in the United States. I guess there's most of the sources tend to be in Asia, but they have some clean source. But it's evidently amazing for storage of energy.
Okay.
And so that was very different. I hadn't come across vanadium.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that was very neat. The other thing in terms of, we talk about robotics and manufacturing and quality control. One of the presenters, they specialize. Because a lot of times you can do quality control and you get pictures and you load them and they're able to figure out what's good and bad. Because the one thing as consumers we don't want defective goods, period.
Right.
Right. But the problem is when it comes to AI, if it's like plastic or metal and it has shiny and it has a lot of edges, it gets shadows and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you know what good is? Right. And usually you have all of these systems that go, you load the thousands of pictures and you're trying to teach it human intuition. Well, these people at Bucket Robotics did something different.
Bucket Robotics. Okay, what a name. Yeah, but go on. Yeah. They're going to name it something.
They start with the step file, right? So the CAD file, the step file.
Yeah.
And so the computer has already defined what is computer perfect that it's created. And so the computer talks to the computer and says, this is what good looks like. And then the computer goes, well, let me think all the ways you can mess this up. I know what it's supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. And it very quickly, very accurately develops a kind of human tuition for quality control.
Okay.
And so it looks really well in the areas where they still haven't been able to automate.
Okay.
To automate the quality control.
Nice. I like that idea. Okay.
So that a human being doesn't have to look at the plastic and go, well, that's obviously, because things that are ridiculously obvious to humans, but tedious because you're like, seriously, this is my worth to the world is seeing that this piece of plastic has a wart on it or something.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
They have the pictures where they can go and use that. So very interesting. Definitely. Crazy.
So how was CES unveiled? Did you see anything cool there?
Oh, unveiled. Yeah. So that hard drive, I sent you what was the specs on that hard drive that's taking off on my, let me find where it is. But there is a hard drive data storage with TARDIS and the hyperdrive. The TARDIS was the...
Okay, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love how they had the sling pocket. For those of you not familiar, TARDIS makes backpacks and the padded ones that we could put all our backpacks in.
Yes. But
the best part about the backpack pouch is it has a sling. Because you know when you put your backpack on the floor at the airport and it goes clunk?
Yes. Yes.
And you go cringe, especially when they had hard drives instead of solid state.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. We're showing our age. Oh, no. Remember?
It wasn't that long ago.
Hard drives. Yeah. The dog that we caught from last year, Tom, the dementia dog, was there. Nakvi, the human-machine interface that has advanced human-machine interface, was there.
Okay.
Narwhal, the floor cleaner automated, was there. So a lot of the technology that we have featured in previous years was there. But we did catch had some interesting things. The brain gets fried after a while. It's hard.
Oh, I know.
There's so much input. It literally, like, your brain gets blinded towards... Kind of like they talked about after they watched Taylor Swift's concert and they didn't remember any of it.
Yes.
So I've tried to give myself a lot of notes. Liber guitar. So we just released this week our top 10 captured videos of 2025. And one of them was the stringless guitar.
Yes.
They were there again.
Nice.
Yeah. They definitely had some intelligent automation in the physical objects. That were, once again, agentic AI, but it was in a physical object that can do stuff in your house, like set a timer or things around. So you saw the physical AI coming to the home.
Very cool. Now, you've got a bunch of items at TBW. Go ahead and give out the info where people can find them.
Yes, please go to our YouTube channel at TBW Advisors. That's T for technical, B for business, and W for whispers. TBW Advisors on YouTube. And the videos originally dropped to the membership area, the same price as a cup of coffee, for preview before they get dressed, and then they go public.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And Dr. Doreen Galley.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Eve reached out and she phoned me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. And her son was asking why his video game needed updates. And this is something that, as we went through this, one of the experiences that I recalled was that I purchased a brand new Xbox a number of years ago. And along with that, I purchased three or four games on disc. And one of them was a hot new game. It had only come out a matter of a month or two beforehand. And it had to download a big, huge, monstrous update. And this was just a matter of a couple of months after both of these had been released. So I knew what was going on, but most people aren't aware of this. See, games today are never really done. They're platforms. They're not the true final product. Back in the day, when we bought games on cartridges or discs, what you got was what you played. That included bugs and all. But modern games have been redesigned with a number of different concepts in mind. They can release these games with the expectation that updates will follow. And that means that some of those are going to come with bugs. Some of those are going to come with downloadable content. Some of those are going to come with a lot of these different things along the way, changing the game to make it less challenging or more challenging based on user experiences. See, developers will often ship games with known issues. They want to patch them later. And that might be because they've got a tight deadline. They've stated it's going to come out on November 12, and they have to meet that deadline. Otherwise, they're going to get into a lot of trouble with all of their various customers. Other times, they release these games, but again, they have all of these different issues in them, and they discover them later because the entire game is so complex, it's difficult to really test every single aspect of it. Along the way, these updates will fix the bugs, like I've mentioned. They'll also improve performance. I also mentioned that downloadable content, and that downloadable content can be in the form of things like more levels. This can be more characters. This can be more maps. This can be seasonal events. All of this is designed in the idea of keeping the players engaged. So even though you bought the game, you installed the game, what you got was the license and the starting point. It's probably workable right there, but the rest of the game is still arriving, and this is arriving piece by piece. And a lot of the games these days, behind the scenes, they're evolving constantly. And yeah, not always for the player's benefit. Many games today are being connected to online services, the leaderboards, the multiplayer servers, the in-game stores, and all of these different systems change on a very frequent basis. And some of these, I will note, these updates might include some new monetization hooks. They want to get you to spend more money. They may include some balance tweaks. They may include back-end changes that have nothing to do with gameplay, but everything to do with business. So some of these updates, one of the updates I noticed over the years is licensing. They get music rights, for instance. There's a driving game, and I can't remember the name of it right now. And the music used to include some pretty popular music and some cool stuff. And then they changed that, and so the music became a little bit more bland, a little bit more generic. And we see things like brands changing, and there's some games out there which have in-game advertising, so they may be shifting up what the advertising is saying on it, and as such, they have to adjust all of this. They have to adjust the content so that it is properly delivered and replaced as needed. Additionally, we see things about compliance, and there's nothing we can do to avoid that. We have all kinds of privacy laws, and we have parental controls, and we have platform requirements that are constantly shifting, and they force developers to tweak how the data is handled and how the game is working. So yes, sometimes the updates are just about fixing what should have worked in the first place. And rushed releases often mean that the real debugging happens after launch. So what can you do about this chaos? And the reality is, if your son's console or PC is set to auto-update, it may be downloading a variety of patches in the background or in the foreground, sometimes at inconvenient times. for some of these things, Steam is really nice about this. You can schedule your updates for overnight or off hours. You can pause them entirely if they're eating up your internet during the wrong hours or whatever. And there are platforms that allow you to prioritize which games will update first. And that's helpful if storage is tight or you're juggling a bunch of different titles. And there's so many of these different layers. It's not just like there's one thing that's going on. It's not like we can just say, oh, yeah, turn all of the updates off. You want the updates. But you can also check to see if the game can be played offline, allowing him to proceed. You can check to see if there are ways to turn off updates while the game is playing. And some of these updates are optional unless you're going online. And that is a key thing to remember. And this is something that we're going to see continuing for a long time. We're going to see this not change in any time in the near future. But it is for the better, for all of us. Yes, the game was installed. But in today's world, as I mentioned, it's just the beginning. The rest of the game, the experience, is just a moving target. Just like what's on screen there in the game. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, IT, and how all of this intertwines. I can remember a long list of different things that have happened with computers. I do a lot of diagnosis over the years, and still do to this day. This is both a past tense, present tense, and I hope future tense. And people have sometimes gotten, I want to say bent out of shape. And they think that I'm somehow holding a grudge against them. That somehow I remember this particular thing that they're going through and I'm blaming them. And this isn't a matter of anything that's personal. And all I'm doing is following, you remember Hansel and Gretel and the whole idea of the breadcrumbs, you know, and I want you to really think this through. I'm sitting there and a call comes in and it's the same error message. It's the same user. It's the same machine. And it's the same kind of frustration. And I will bring up this thing. Okay, I'm looking at this. And that person might say, why do you keep bringing up the past? Because in a way, the past just keeps waving at me and us. It keeps happening over and over again. And it's not like I'm keeping score. And I'm not sitting there, I've got a chalkboard with tally marks and all of this. No, a lot of this is seeking out and trying to find patterns in the forest of what's going on here. What looks like a memory is my going through and thinking through all of the different things. You think about the detective on the various TV shows, and he sees the same muddy footprints at every crime scene. And that is an indication to him that these are all linked together. Something like a doctor asking you, have you had this pain before? And you go, yes. And because that's something that matters. See, these repeat issues are clues. This isn't some kind of emotional issue here. Computers don't all of a sudden relapse out of just frustration with you. Everything that's happening with your computer is a mechanical, logical sequence that's going on. And the more that you dive deeper into all of these things and you ask questions about what was going on when you had this happen? How did this present itself? Was there anything different you did today? Was there something that you did the same thing each time? And I ask these questions. All good IT people keep asking these questions because we want to become that detective, to dig on down and find the root cause of whatever's happening to your system or to the network or to the server or to whatever is going on. We keep digging into this. Systems fail in familiar ways. And different things along the way, a corrupted configuration file doesn't magically all of a sudden heal itself. And a failing hard drive doesn't all of a sudden say, oh, hey, I'm going to work today. No, I didn't work yesterday and I'm not going to work tomorrow, but today I'm going to do great. And a lot of these different things start adding together, and we start figuring this out. We start trying to find what is going on. From the IT professional side of the glass, this isn't an isolated fire. It's recurring sparks from the same shorted wire, and we have to find that shorted wire, and we have to fix that. Each of these different things creates diagnostic breadcrumbs. Us remembering the last time you called, us remembering these conversations, us going through and saying, did we check this? Did we do that? And we, as IT professionals, and you should be taking part in this, we take logs, we take tickets, we take notes, and these are all those little breadcrumbs leading back along that path through the forest to get us home. Each one of them says, you've been here before, turn left when you get to that next point. And all of this history that we keep, and you should be doing this too, it helps narrow everything down. That way we don't have to guess wildly. We don't have to go, 1, 2, 3, just type in 1, 2, 3 and that'll magically solve. No, we don't do that. We look to go straight for the suspect. Okay, there's muddy footprints here, and they're a size 12 shoe, extra wide, with this big, huge just pattern on it. And, oh, hey, so you're sitting here, and what size shoe do you wear? Yeah, size 12, huh? And those are some pretty interesting boots. Where'd you get those from? And they got a lot of mud on them. And so we narrow this down. This is how we get to the end. IT professionals think in systems, not moments. We don't look to give blame to you. We don't look to give blame to even the system. We look simply to stop the loop, to break the cycle, to quiet down that ghost in the machine. This isn't something of reacting. We want to be predicting. And yes, when we say it's happened before, we want you to understand that that's part of us trying to find whodunit. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person.
Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Lionel's question, why do some people still use ad blockers, and is it hurting the websites that they visit? And I'm going to start off by admitting that I use Ad Blocker Plus. Not a sponsor, none of that. It's just that's what I use. And I find it quite a bit helpful in a lot of the web activity that I do. And for a lot of people, ad blockers aren't really about rebellion and more about survival. And we see all of these different websites that are overloaded with pop-ups and autoplay videos and trackers and all of this stuff that just slows the experience down. It distracts from what our goal is, which in my case is to take in information, to be able to process that and to learn, to reuse, to give it to you here on air. And ad blockers will clean up the experience. And that means that pages load faster. And if I'm on battery with my laptop, the battery's going to last longer. And I'm not getting the annoying flashing banners or the fake download buttons or any of that. Additionally, we get across a number of these different blockers a reduction in the amount of tracking. You see some of these ads that are popping up come bundled with scripts that follow you across the web, and they build a profile whether you like it or not. Additionally, we see malicious ads, and these malicious ads have been known in the past. They could spread malware on reputable sites. They could get in the way of legitimate ads and things like that. Ad blockers aren't so much about preference as they are about control and privacy and peace of mind. Now, does it impact sites that we use? Yes. Most websites rely on a level of ad revenue to stay afloat, especially the smaller publishers, the blogs, and independent creators. And when you block those ads, you are blocking not all of their ability, but some ability to earn money from your visit, even if you enjoy their content. Of course, we have seen a lot of sites now detecting the ad blockers, and they ask you, would you please whitelist this or pay us, subscribe? And that gives you kind of an idea of where they feel they want to be. Of course, every website wants to bring in every single penny that they can, and every website out there has a right to a good portion of revenue coming from all of the information that they provide to you. So you have to use this as a balance. You have to think about this, and the balance is between your clean, safe experience and what the publishers need in order to pay the bills. And that's why I know that I go through, and there are sites that I do trust and I will whitelist them. And there's some where I say no. But that whitelisting gives me a chance to support content I value without giving up control everywhere else. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with TheRadioFactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, The Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.